Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Pop Tail Weekly. Today is September 1st, 2021. Excuse me, and I am Liam. I want to thank you for joining me for this episode. I know the last few weeks have been really sparse, and I want to apologize. I'm glad we were able to do the giveaway. Big thank you to Nick for making that possible. But this month, we've got a full month ahead of us, so we're going to get down to it. So today's skill is Journey 3000, and this is an interesting skill. And anybody that grew up in the 80s and 90s is going to really appreciate this. As I always do, I'm going to read the description and, we'll get an idea of what the skill is going to be. And then, of course, we'll play it. But before I do that, I do want to remind you guys that we are on social media. So make sure that you are following us on Twitter. It's Poptail Social on Twitter. We are, I believe, Poptail on Facebook. So we are on all those platforms, and I do hope that you can take the time to follow us. Make sure that you're following us on YouTube as well. And we should hopefully have some cool stuff coming up on YouTube soon. So besides these, there should be some other neat little trailers and things. So let's take a look at this skill. So Journey 3000, an interactive audio adventure by SpeechCloud. I've heard of these guys. I've heard they've done some neat stuff. This is our first skill, I believe, that we're doing from them. I believe they've done some others. So, the description. The first interactive audio adventure based on a Bantam Classic, Choose Your Own Adventure Registered book, written and adapted by voice. Written and adapted for voice by the creator of the concept and author of the first book in the original series, Edward Packard. Story. You have been hibernating in the space capsule for almost 1,000 years. Now awake, you're eager to return to the Earth in the year 3000. It's not that easy. Winston, your onboard supercomputer, reports that Earth is very different and far more dangerous than when you left it. Mortal peril, but also thrills, excitement, and success await you in your future life. Stay alert and good luck. What happens will depend on the choices you make every step of the way. So, this is pretty cool. So, they also have a little section here that gives us the navigational controls. Hopefully the game will tell us, but we can actually go back, repeat scene. We got a few controls. But it's pretty straightforward. This is the kind of stuff that if you grew up in the 80s and 90s, this is the kind of stuff you like. I think a lot of people remember the Choose Your Own Adventure books. You would get them from the library, and they were always a lot of fun. I actually had a teacher that turned them in, a couple of them, into Braille for me. So I was able to play them as well, which was really exciting. So, this is cool stuff. Hey, Alex, I hope you're doing well. Audio Game Geek is also here. Again, I am not as active with chat, just so that you guys know. I am seeing it, though, and just because I don't read your comment does not mean I am not seeing it. We do things a little differently. This week was one of those weeks where I didn't have a chance to do something for my viewers. Normally, if you're watching on my side of the mountain, you'll notice that I do some other streams for viewers, but this has been one of those weeks where it just wasn't possible. Trenton's here. Hey, Trenton, he's watching via Poptail's channel. All right. Well, I don't want to spend too much time, but while I'm playing, I would love to know what your experiences were with the Choose Your Own Adventure books. Did you, read any of them? Did you own any of them? Did you enjoy them? Did you have a favorite book? So maybe write in and let me know, and I'll try to feature a couple of those messages as time permits. But how about we play this game? So like every other skill, we invoke it by saying the wake word, which in our case is Ziggy, Open Journey 3000.
I don't know that one.
Uh-oh. Ziggy, Launch Journey 3000.
Okay, here's Journey 3000. There we go. An interactive audio adventure. Welcome to Journey 3000, an interactive audio adventure. Life 1,000 years in the future is wilder than you can imagine, but if you survive, you'll have some very surprising fun. Start listening to see what happens, but be ready to make decisions and say clearly what they are. If you want to go back to a previous choice, say, previous choice. If you want to skip a chapter, say, skip.
Oh.
For more game control instructions, say, help. To begin your journey to the year 3000, say, start.
Start.
Speech Cloud Studios presents Journey to the Year 3000. Written and adapted by Edward Packard and narrated by David Corin Sweat.
Would you like to take a trip to the year 3000? The person who asks you this question isn't crazy. He's your next-door neighbor, Dr. Max Freeman, and he happens to be the incredibly brilliant scientist who directs the Space Double X project. Why not? You say with a smile. I'm serious. Dr. Freeman answers. Your eyes widen. Do you mean you have a time machine? Of course not, Dr. Freeman says. It'll be several hundred years before we can invent anything that sophisticated. We have a method that's extremely advanced, but it's a lot simpler than a time machine. Really? What could that be? A computerized, self-propelled, orbiting space capsule in which the occupant goes into hibernation for almost 1,000 years. We've developed this in our lab. It's taken 15 years, 20 counting pre-development. But it's ready to go. And I could be the one who tries it? Right. I recommended you because I know that you're smart, courageous, resourceful, reliable, fast-thinking, and above all, curious. You can hardly answer. You're practically shaking with excitement or fear. You can't be sure which. Am I right? Quick, yes or no? Yes. No.
Yes.
Terrific! Dr. Freeman's eyes gleam as if struck with light.
I should have said no.
But wait, you say. How will I get back from the year 3000 to the present? Good question. I did say time machines wouldn't be invented for several hundred years. But within 1,000 years, certainly by the year 3000, they should be quite well perfected. I can't absolutely promise you, but if all goes well, you should be able to get back to the present, and to everyone else it will seem as if you've never been away. You take a minute to think over Dr. Freeman's offer. He's right. You are curious. And this adventure looks too good to miss. I'll do it, you say. Glad to see you're not a wimp, Dr. Freeman says. The next two windows for launching are 3 days from now at noon and 28 days from now at 10 a.m. Which do you prefer? 3 days from now? 28 days from now.
28 days from now.
Groggy as you feel after a long, long sleep, waking up, you remember this much. The day you were launched arrived, liftoff went well, then... what? It's hard to remember, except you know that your head feels like it's stuffed with wet cotton. You can barely move. Where are you? The dim light gets brighter. You peel back your eyelids, still half closed with sleep. A needle is stuck in your wrist. You yank it out. A robot arm daubs the spot. You feel vulnerable. You might as well admit it. You're scared. Should you jump up and look out of the window? Or lie quietly a minute and think? Lie quietly and try to think. Jump up and look out.
Lie quietly and think.
Eyes half closed, you try to clear your mind. Gradually, you remember. Dr. Freeman, spaceflight training, briefings at the launch base. Most of all, the spooky feeling you had when they closed the capsule lid, locking you inside for 1,000 years. Then, liftoff. The deepening blackness of space. Earth, the blue-white ball below. North Africa between the clouds. Earth shrinking into a crescent suspended in space. Sleep.
Good morning. A cheery voice greets you. Welcome to the year 3000. January 14th, Earth date, to be exact. In case you forgot, I'm Winston, your onboard supercomputer. I'm happy to report that you came through hibernation in perfect condition. My functions are all working perfectly.
Well, that's good.
And so are your space capsule's guidance and propulsion systems.
That's also good.
You are now wide awake and getting extremely excited. What a relief to get Winston's report that everything's working perfectly, including you. You're also curious about something. Have time machines been invented yet? Indeed, they have. But many of them don't work right.
Uh-oh.
Some can send time waves that travel a long distance and send you back into the past without warning. Ugh. It is too bad, Winston says, because perfect time machines have been invented. Maybe you'll come across one. You sip some rehydrated lemonade through a plastic tube and glance through the narrow window. Some of the constellations have changed in shape over the past 1,000 years, but they're the same friendly stars you remember, except for one that is far brighter than the others, and a fainter one beside it. You guess that they are not stars at all, but the Earth and the Moon. You can't wait to see what Earth is like in the year 3000. Set course for Earth, Winston. Land in the best place possible. You expect to hear the capsule's small maneuvering rockets going into action.
Uh-oh.
Instead, nothing happens. Winston? You try to keep the nervousness out of your voice. Did you understand the command I just gave? Of course, the computer replies. I told you I was functioning perfectly. But I'm programmed not to set course until I've found a suitable place to land. Well, haven't you done that by now? You've had almost 1,000 years to figure it out while I've been asleep. I'm sorry to tell you this, but Earth is entirely controlled by Styx Mori, the most ruthless, cruel tyrant in history.
Oh.
His agents are everywhere. No matter where we land, you'll probably be captured, tortured, and killed. You fight back the panic clutching at your throat. Is there any other place I can go? Some other planet? A space station? Mars may be a possibility. Some refugees from the Democracy of Americas fled there 200 years ago, and their descendants may be eking out a living on a desert oasis. But Mars is a bitter, cold, desolate place.
What about Venus?
Hundreds of years ago, the World Federation blew off Venus's cloud cover with massive nuclear blasts in an effort to cool the planet and make it habitable. Soon afterward, Earth was racked by wars. I can't find any data about what's happened since.
What about the Moon?
Barren and unbelievably cold, except where it's unbelievably hot.
Any other ideas, Winston? You've got to think of something.
Nothing. You try to pull yourself together.
You can't just do nothing.
Tell Winston to take you to Mars? To Venus? To Earth?
Let's go to
Mars. Or to put you back in hibernation for a few hundred years in hopes that things will improve?
Mars.
Tell Winston to take you to Mars? To Venus?
Ziggy. Take me to Mars.
Two small rocket bursts flip your capsule out of sun orbit and send it streaking towards Mars. For the next 2 days, you squirm and stretch, feeling like a butterfly still locked in its cocoon. Through the window, you watch what looks like a bright red star grow increasingly more brilliant until it becomes a disk that expands in size as your capsule approaches it. Suddenly, you're pressed against the wall. The capsule is decelerating.
Entering Mars orbit, Winston announces.
You look down eagerly at the craters, escarpments, canyons, and vast stretches of flat, rocky desert.
I thought Earth would be a bad idea.
There's no sign of life. The scene is as desolate as space itself. Your capsule enters the planet's shadow, and you're plunged into darkness. Winston, maybe we should leave here and try to land on Earth.
Impossible, the computer replies. Not enough fuel.
Oh.
An hour later, you enter the daylight zone again. This time, your orbit is taking you closer to the planet's equator. You close your eyes and imagine that when you open them, you'll see a lake or a meadow. Maybe Winston can find something with his high-resolution optical scanners. Another hour passes. Then, like a black veil drawn across your face, darkness descends again. You bury your head in your arms, more from depression than fatigue. When you awaken, it's daylight again. The sun, still brilliant, though noticeably smaller than the way it looks from Earth, shines in your eyes as the capsule enters the daylight zone. Again, you look down at the desolate landscape. "Emergency," Winston announces. "We must land immediately. There is an 87% probability that my main feeder circuit will fail in 23 minutes and 4 seconds. I've found two landing sites. One of them is a deep canyon at 20 degrees south latitude. I register unusually high oxygen and moisture there.
Ooh.
The other site is on the Sagan Plateau. My sensors have spotted what may be a bubble dome erected by intelligent creatures. It's open and visible, so it's probably a commando base of the tyrant Styx Mori. Should we look for better places, Winston?" "We don't have time." Winston's speech is speeded up. "We can land at either of the sites, if you select one within 37 seconds. A digital display flashes. Seconds remaining. 36, 35, 34. You must decide now. Take a chance the feeder circuit won't fail and order Winston to look for a better place. Order Winston to land near the bubble dome. Order Winston to land in the canyon.
Order Winston to land in the canyon.
The capsule drops out of orbit. Despite the thin atmosphere and light gravity of Mars, heat shields are still necessary. The descent is so swift you have no time to study the landscape rushing toward you. All you noticed is a vast plateau strewn with red boulders and a canyon so deep that the bottom is black as night. In a few minutes, you're floating deep between the canyon walls. The capsule shifts course to keep between them as the canyon bends. Now the sun is shining on the canyon floor. On Earth, you'd probably see the river that cut this deep cleft over millions of years, work that was completed on Mars eons ago. The ground is nothing but dry red sand and rock. Winston cuts power, except for minimal thrust landing rockets. They fire with amazing precision and set you down gently. Instead of looking out the window, you fasten your eyes on Winston's display screen. Feeder circuit failure, and the screen goes black.
Yep.
Cautiously, you hook up your oxygen booster, turn the latch handles on the escape hatch, and open the door a crack. It violently blows open, sweeping you outside in a rush of air. Your ears pop. You gasp for breath. You find yourself sitting on the rusty-colored sand. You're afraid you're going to suffocate in the thin Martian air, but Winston knew what he was doing. You're in an oxygen-rich pocket, far below the average Martian surface.
That's good.
You look around the dry, lifeless landscape. There's not even a desert plant in sight. No birds, of course. Not an ant or a fly. But your heart leaps as you notice an opening in the side of the canyon wall.
Ooh.
The top of the opening is almost a perfect arch. It must have been carved by intelligent creatures, maybe human refugees from Earth. You return to the capsule and take the lantern from your survival kit. You're still having some trouble breathing, but you feel as light as a bird, about a third of what you would on Earth. With your lantern strapped onto your head, you step through the opening. It leads to an area the size of a large room. Along one wall, you notice the entrance to a narrow tunnel. You'd like to see where it leads, but it tilts down so steeply you're afraid that you'd lose your footing and slip. Go down into the tunnel. Explore along the canyon floor.
Go down into the tunnel.
Carefully making your way down the steep slope of the tunnel, you are astounded to find that it ends in a descending staircase.
Oh.
The stone steps are square and level, almost certainly shaped by human hands. As best as you can tell in the dim light, the distance between steps increases a few steps farther down. To descend farther, you'll have to jump down from step to step. You're not sure you could get back up again. Jump down from step to step. Turn back.
Jump down from step to step.
You step down, but your footing gives way and you slide in a cascading of crumbling rocks to the floor of a subterranean cavern.
Oof.
When you look up, you realize you'd have to jump at least 7 feet to get back to where you could regain a foothold. Sounds like nothing you've ever heard echo against the cavern walls. A smooth white object, looks like a giant clam, rises out of the rubble around you. Smack! Its hinged shells close like snapping jaws on a large rock. You shrink back. Whatever this creature is, it doesn't come from Earth.
Nope.
All life on Earth is based on carbon. This rock monster must be made of silicon.
There's no time to think. It twists towards you. It thinks you're a rock. Its giant shells are set to close on your body. You look up at the bottom step, 7 feet above you. Can you jump that high? If you don't make it, you'll fall into the rock monster's waiting jaws. Try to jump to the step above. Run for it.
Run for it.
You start to run into the cavern, but smack! A rock monster's jaws clamp down on you.
Uh-oh.
The end.
Oh!
You have found one out of 32 possible endings and explored 10% of the story. Do you want to return to your previous choice or start over?
Previous choice.
You look up at the bottom step, 7 feet above you. Can you jump that high? If you don't make it, you'll fall into the rock monster's waiting jaws. Try to jump to the step above. Run for it.
Try to jump to the step above. Can I make it?
You leap up and grab the ledge formed by the step above and pull yourself up. It was easy. You'd almost forgotten that although Mars is a cold, barren, oxygen-deprived planet, one thing about it gives you an advantage. Light gravity. You can jump 7 feet with ease and could even clear an 8 or 9 foot high bar and land as gracefully as a cat. Man. Climbing swiftly, you leave the rock monster behind and soon reach the main cavern. As you proceed through the cavern toward the pink-tinted light at the opening, you take a moment to explore along the rock wall. The air smells humid. You feel the rock with your hand. It's damp. There's a sort of alcove in the rocks. At its base is a depression. You rip the lantern off your head and shine it into the space. It's the entrance to an inner cave. You step through and gasp at what you see. A pool, perhaps 40 feet across, fed by a trickle of water flowing from the interior wall.
Ooh.
Thousands of feet below the high desert plateau, water, formed in an ancient age, has been trapped. You know that the surface of Mars can't sustain water. In the thin, dry air, the rate of evaporation is tremendous. But here in this cavern, the air pressure is higher than on the surface, and the water evaporates no more rapidly than on Earth. You lean over the pond and taste the water, cool and fresh as from a mountain stream. A noise coming from the entrance, a hoarse breathing sound, causes you to freeze. A hulking shape, a quadruped, built like a rhinoceros and almost as big, waddles into sight.
Uh-oh.
The beast is covered with a thick, knobby hide. Its eyes are located at the ends of two trunks that extend like flexible horns from its head.
Well, this isn't
the rest of which consists of its monstrous jaws. It has no nose, but breathes heavily through its mouth, exposing, with each breath, a double line of sharp, silvery teeth.
Uh-oh.
You watch the beast lurch to the water's edge. It drinks from the pool, just as you did. You're sure it's a carnivore, and you know that you are made of meat.
Yeah.
One good thing, it has very short legs. You can probably outrun it. Run for the entrance. Stay absolutely still.
Stay absolutely still.
You stand motionless, hoping the hulking creature won't see you. It drinks, then waves its eye trunks.
Uh-oh.
They train on you.
Uh-oh.
It bends over and drinks again. It looks up again, this time pointing its eyes towards the entrance. Another hulk has arrived.
Oh,
it waddles over to the pond and begins to drink. The two of them lumber over to a far wall and tuck in their heads and eye trunks. Now they look like large boulders. Slowly you work your way toward the entrance. You've taken a few steps when the water surface breaks. Two, then three, then several more small, seal-like creatures press their flippers against the side of the pool.
Seals!
They peer around. They scramble across the floor of the cave to a wall between you and the hulks. Rearing up on their hind flippers, they gnaw at the stalactites that have formed on the roof of the cave. What a curious food, you think, especially for an animal that looks like it should be eating fish. Suddenly the hulks uncoil, their eye trunks fixed on the seals, their jaws opening as they lumber clumsily toward the feeding animals.
Uh-oh.
The seals scramble back into the water. They aren't fast, but neither are the hulks. The seals will make it, except for one little one that's missing part of a flipper.
Oh, no!
There's a rock nearby. You have a strong urge to hurl it at the hulk closest to the little seal. Throw the rock. Decide not to interfere.
Throw the rock.
You hurl the rock and hit the Hulk between the eyes. It topples backwards, bellowing. The little seal flops safely into the water. Other seals are watching. One of them, which had reached the water, swims towards you, barking. Another places its flippers over the edge of the pool and looks at you curiously. You'd like to play with the seals, but now the Hulks are lumbering around the edge of the pool. Uh-oh. They're headed for you. You race for the entrance. You're about 3 steps away when you stop in your tracks. Another Hulk is coming into the cave, blocking your way.
Oh,
there's a rock near your feet. Maybe you can knock the beast out of the way and get past it. In a split second, you consider the only other option, to dive into the pool. Fight the Hulk. Dive into the pool.
Dive into the pool.
You sidestep an oncoming Hulk, and with a twisting motion, arms outstretched, dive into the pool.
Whee, splash.
In an instant, you're surrounded by friendly seals. The Hulks hover at the edge, snapping their huge jaws. But they dare not enter. In their own element, the seals are masters. This does you little good. You can't tread water forever, and the Hulks show no sign of leaving. One of the seals tugs at your shirt, then starts to dive and pull you along. Another does the same. Are they trying to drown you? They seem so friendly and intelligent. Then you understand. They want you to dive. But how could they help you that way? Maybe they don't understand that you can't breathe underwater. Then something occurs to you. These seals, so much like the ones on Earth, don't breathe underwater either. They came from somewhere that's open to the air. There's nothing to lose. You take a deep breath and dive. The seals dive with you, nudging you along. They are guiding you through an underwater tunnel, but you have no idea how long the tunnel is, and your breath is running out. You can't last much longer.
Come on, dude.
Turn back to get to the surface. Swim on.
Swim on.
Your lungs are straining to the utmost. You swim as smoothly and swiftly as you can, following the seals through the tunnel. You wish you could turn back, but you can't now. You'd never make it. You fight the urge to breathe underwater. Your lungs are bursting. Then the tunnel ends. You shoot up to the surface, gasping, almost too exhausted to swim. But the friendly seals buoy you up. All you have to do is relax as they nudge you toward the shore.
Hey!
Your feet touch bottom.
They saved us.
You pat the nearest seals and gratefully step out onto a smooth, sandy beach. Looking around, you see that you surfaced in a lake at least a mile long. The lake and its surroundings are in a vast cavern. High on the walls of the canyon, perhaps 100 feet or more above the ground, are evenly spaced lamps, each of which looks like a full moon on Earth. By this light, you can see little cottages and long, low buildings. It's as if a nightmare you were having had been transformed into a happy dream. But who lives here? Are they refugees from Earth? People who fled here to escape the tyranny of Styx Mori? Or are they Martians who, finding their planet drying up, were forced to build a civilization underground? Who are you? You whirl and confront a short, solidly built man, dressed in crudely fashioned blue pants and shirt. His thick hair and beard form a gray wreath around his ruddy, weathered face. Where did you come from? He asks before you can answer. It's a long story, you say. Come with me, then, he says in a polite, though guarded tone. There are many here in Caverna who will want to talk to you. My name is Tabor, he says. He leads you to a simple stone cottage, where you meet his wife, Tan, and his brother, Andras. You learn that they are indeed descendants of refugees from Earth, who discovered this great cavern and settled here hundreds of years ago. Tabor explains that 97 people live in the community, called Caverna. They survive by growing vegetables hydroponically in tanks. Their only other food is fish from the lake and edible crystals found in the stalactites. The government of Caverna is tribal. The chief, Saruma, is the sole ruler, though he is bound by law and custom. I guess Saruma will want to meet me, you say. Indeed he will, Tabor replies. Then he will see to it that you don't leave Caverna for the rest of your life. He's afraid that if anyone leaves, they will reveal our secret location to Styx Mori. We don't mind staying here. It is our home. But for you it may seem like a prison. There may be a way you can escape. How can I reach the surface? You ask. If we were caught helping you escape, we would be imprisoned. But I will tell you how to find it. It is a difficult journey. If you reach the surface, you may be able to team up with other Earth people who have a settlement not far from where you'll come out. But I must warn you, no matter how well you're equipped, it's not easy to stay alive on the surface of this planet. Decide to meet Saruma. Try to reach the surface.
Decide to meet Saruma.
Saruma, a frail, elderly man, receives you at his house, the largest in Caverna. It's set on a high bluff overlooking the lake. He listens attentively to your story, but when you ask for his permission to journey to the surface, he silences you with a sweeping motion of his hand.
We are safe here in Caverna only because the Earth Tyrant does not know that we exist. Styx Mori thinks Mars is a desolate, almost uninhabitable planet. That's the only reason he leaves us alone. If I were to let you go up to the surface, you might meet his commandos, or even find your way back to Earth. Then he would find out that there is a last little village left to conquer.
But I would keep it a secret, you insist. Saruma shakes his head.
I want to trust you, young friend, but Styx Mori has ways of making people talk. Ways you would not want to hear about. I'm sorry, but you must stay here for the rest of your life. To make sure that neither you nor anyone else ever escapes, I have decided to seal the only entrance to Caverna.
Saruma arranges for you to live with Tabor and his family. You enjoy working by the lake and helping train the seals to bring fish to shore, and soon you know many of these intelligent and friendly animals by name. You consider them, along with the people of Caverna, to be your good friends. It's not a bad life, and there's plenty of time for fun. But you miss the trees, the grass, and the sun. The end.
Oh!
You have found 2 out of 32 possible endings and explored 17% of the story.
Wow, so we've got a lot
to do.
Do you
want to return to your previous choice or start over?
Previous choice.
Decide to meet Saruma. Try to reach the surface.
Try to reach the surface.
Tabor tells you how to reach the surface. Once you get there, you must climb to the top of the mesa, he says. From there, the way will be obvious. You bid Tabor and his family goodbye and set out along a steep and rocky path that leads along one side of the cavern wall. Though you must travel only 3 or 4 miles to reach the tunnel leading to the surface, you have to feel your way along. In the dim light, it would be easy to stumble and fall.
That would be bad.
You enter a steep, winding tunnel. Phosphorus embedded in the rock gives off an eerie green light. After hours of groping your way along, you feel exhausted and discouraged. You are close to giving up when you see light ahead. The tunnel bends, and suddenly, the entrance is only a few feet away. You start to run, but stop short, gasping. The air here is extremely thin. You reach for your emergency oxygen supply as you peer out at the Martian desert. Everywhere you look is the red, rock-strewn plain. There's no sign of life, no plants, no clouds in the sky. Only the sun, high in the sky, but distinctly smaller and less brilliant than seen from Earth. When it sets, the temperature will drop by 100 degrees.
Ooh.
You must find the settlement Tabor mentioned before nightfall, or you'll be frozen by morning. Maybe you shouldn't attempt it. Maybe you should turn back. Turn back? Continue on.
Continue on.
To the north is the mesa Tabor mentioned. You make your way slowly toward it, trying to use as little oxygen as possible. It takes you an hour to reach the top, but you're rewarded with a sight you've wanted so much to see. The plastic dome of the Earth settlers, camouflaged with red and brown patterns.
Ooh.
You run toward it, jumping across little rocks and darting around the big ones. In the light gravity of Mars, you can run like a deer. There will be plenty of oxygen at the space dome, so you gulp greedily from your own supply. You're nearing the entrance when 2 men run out. They're wearing military uniforms and each holds a laser pistol aimed at you.
Uh-oh.
On their arm sleeves is an X in a circle. They don't look like the rebels you expected to find. They're not. They're troops of Styx Mori.
Oh, boy.
Soon you're locked in a cell. A guard tells you that although Mori has decided that Mars isn't worth colonizing, he can't bear the thought that anyone is living in freedom there. His solution is simple. find everyone on Mars, and kill them. The guard stops talking as Gruford, the bearded leader of the commandos, enters. He looks at you contemptuously. There is no compassion, no humanity, not even curiosity, in his steel-gray eyes. He flips a gleaming 8-inch-long stiletto from hand to hand as he speaks.
Uh-oh.
We know there are more refugees on this planet, but we haven't been able to find them. We have food and oxygen supplies for 6 more days. Then we must return to Earth.
The blade leaps from the stiletto. He swings it until it's pointed at your throat.
Tell us where there are more refugees, and I will take you back to Earth and see that you are comfortable there. Otherwise, my men will slice you into little pieces.
Oh.
Tell Gruford about the community living in Caverna. Say that you haven't seen anyone since you landed in the space capsule.
Tell Gruford about the community. I feel bad doing this.
You tell Gruford that 97 people are living in Caverna. A cruel smile breaks out across his face. He rubs his hands gleefully.
6 more, I will be glad to hear of our work. Leader!
One of the guards speaks up.
We'll receive gold medals with the seal of Styx Mori set in fine rubies. Think of it! A chance to kill 97 rebels.
Gruford smiles at the guard. Then, pointing at you, he says,
98!
Oh!
The end.
You have found 3 out of 32 possible endings and explored 21% of the story. Do you want to return to your previous choice or start over?
Previous choice.
Tell us where there are more refugees, and I will take you back to Earth and see that you are comfortable there. Otherwise, my men will slice you into little pieces.
Tell Gruford about the community living in Caverna. Say that you haven't seen anyone since you landed in the space capsule.
Say that you haven't seen anyone since you landed in the space capsule. So long.
You're determined not to sacrifice innocent people just to save your own skin. Thinking fast, you tell Gruford that you climbed a trail from the canyon floor where your space capsule landed, and explain that you've spent most of the past 1,000 years in hibernation. Gruford is suspicious. He insists you prove you're not lying about the space capsule. You have no other choice but to try and find it. Luck is with you, however, and you succeed in finding a path down into the canyon and are able to lead Gruford and another commando to the capsule. Gruford leaps in the air with excitement.
Styx Mori, Emperor of the Earth, will be eager to see this. It will distract them from thinking about how few refugees we were able to find and kill.
He looks at you thoughtfully.
We'll bring you back to Earth along with the capsule. Styx Mori will want to see you.
Laughing, he adds,
after all, you're a curiosity from the distant past.
2 days later, you're in the commando's spaceship, headed for Earth. But you're not going to enjoy the view. A medic is standing over you with a hypodermic syringe in his hand. My orders are to put you to sleep until we arrive on Earth, so you won't give us any trouble. You start to protest, but faster than you can react, the long steel needle enters your flesh.
Oh.
In a second, you're out cold.
Rip.
The medic tried to follow orders, but he mistakenly gave you a lethal dose.
Oh!
The end.
The end.
You have found 4 out of 32 possible endings and explored 23% of the story. Do you want to return to your previous choice
Ziggy
or start
previous
over?
Choice.
Tell us where there are
Ziggy
more refugees.
Ziggy previous choice.
You must find the settlement Tabor mentioned before nightfall, or you'll be frozen by morning. Maybe you shouldn't attempt it. Maybe you should turn back. Turn back?
Ziggy, turn back.
You turn back, but soon become confused about which direction you're heading. Meanwhile, the air temperature is dropping. Your body temperature is dropping, too. Soon it falls so low that you become too chilled and disoriented to think or move.
Well,
the end.
The end.
You have found 5 out of 32 possible
Ziggy
endings.
Ziggy, previous choice. I don't want to start
You must find
over.
The settlement Tabor mentioned before
Ziggy,
nightfall.
Ziggy, previous choice.
You must find the settlement Tabor mentioned
oh,
before nightfall,
further,
or you'll be frozen
I?
By morning.
Ziggy, previous choice.
Decide to meet Saruma?
Oh, I can't go back.
Try to reach the surface.
Ziggy, previous choice. So let's.
The seals dive with you, nudging you along. They are guiding you through
an... Ziggy, previous choice.
Maybe you can knock the beast out of the way and get past it. In a split second, you consider the only other option. to dive into the pool.
Ziggy, previous choice.
There's a rock nearby. You have a strong urge to hurl it at the hulk closest to the
little
seal.
I guess we could start over.
Throw the rock.
Ziggy, start over.
Are you sure you want to return to the very beginning?
Yeah, let's do it. Yes.
There's a rock nearby. You have a strong urge to hurl it at the hulk
Ziggy,
closest to...
Ziggy, start over.
Are you sure you want to return to the very beginning?
Yes.
Restarting the story.
All right.
Speech Cloud Studios presents Journey
Ziggy
to the
skip.
Year 3.
So we can get our show.
Am I right? Quick, yes or no?
No.
Yes.
Oh, no. I was saying no this time. No.
Well, sorry to hear that. I'll find someone else.
The end.
The end.
Ah! What a quick
you
end.
You have found 6 out of 32 possible endings and explored 25% of the story. To restart from the beginning, say, restart.
Restart.
Are you sure you want to return to the very beginning?
Yes.
Restarting the story. Speech
Ziggy
Cloud Studios.
Skip.
Am I right? Quick,
Ziggy,
yes or
yes.
No? Terrific!
Dr. Freeman's eyes
so
gleam.
So this
as
is
if
cool, so...
Light. But wait, you say. How will I get back from the year 3000
Ziggy
to the present?
So we're going to choose the...
The next 2 windows for launching are 3 days from now at
Ziggy,
noon.
Ziggy, 3 days from now. Ziggy, skip.
Should you jump up and look out of the window? Or lie quietly a minute and think? Lie quietly and try to think? Jump up and look out.
Jump up and look out.
You jump out of your cot. It must be the year 3000. A faint hum fills your space capsule, which, like the inside of a hollowed-out egg, has no particular roof or walls or floor, just a narrow window. You look through it at the black sky and stars. Good morning, a cheery voice greets you. Welcome to the year 3000. January 14th, Earth date, to be exact.
So it's the same day.
In case you forgot.
All right, so
I'm Winston, your onboard supercomputer.
Ziggy, skip. So let's get our choices.
Tell Winston to take you to Mars, to Venus,
Should we go to Earth? Let's go.
Or to put you back in hibernation for a few hundred years in hopes that things will improve.
Hibernation.
Winston, put me back into hibernation for a couple of hundred years and wake me up if the situation improves. You lie back and try to sleep, but you're all keyed up. You feel like running and jumping. After 1,000 years, you're really slept out. Come on, Winston, start the hibernation process. Winston! Finally, your computer responds. I wasn't programmed to put you back into hibernation. I'm afraid there's no way to do it. Winston, could you please put us in Earth orbit? I'd like to look over my home planet before deciding what to do. We're on our way. In less than a second, you feel the restraining belts holding you down, then your weight increasing rapidly as your space capsule streaks towards a thin, blue-white crescent. Earth, as it always appears when it is almost directly between the observer and the sun. That night, you sleep soundly. Winston wakes you with his usual cheerful voice. Prepare to enter Earth orbit. Isn't there any place we can land? Things can't be as bad as you think. They are, Winston replies. As you can observe through the starboard window, 2 rockets are streaking toward you.
Uh-oh.
Winston, Morai's defense missiles. He doesn't need to defend himself against us. Winston does not reply, and in the second remaining, you realize it's because there's no point in saying anything. Winston was so logical.
The end.
The end.
So I wonder if we have to go to Mars.
You have found 7 out of 32 possible endings and explored 28% of the story.
All right.
Do you want to return to your previous choice or start over?
Ziggy, previous choice.
Tell Winston to take you to Mars, to Venus, to Earth, or to put you back in hibernation for a few hundred years in hopes that things will improve.
To Venus.
You direct Winston to take you to Venus. It's a 2-day trip, he tells you. The voyage is fascinating. Stars and planets shine in all directions. The view of Earth is spectacular. On the morning of the second day, your home planet is less than 1 million miles away. Near it,
you can see
a bright yellow crescent, the moon. As you streak toward Venus, you feel sad and angry. There have always been wars and cruelty on Earth, but it's horrible to think that a ruthless tyrant controls the whole world. By the time you're ready for a sleep period, Earth looks like no more than a brilliant star, and Venus has swelled into a large crescent of blue-green light. You close your eyes and drift off.
It seems as if you've only had half a night's sleep when you're awakened by your computer. Entering the atmosphere of Venus, you hear a soft whoosh. The retro rockets have fired. The capsule has begun to decelerate.
Here we go.
It's time to select a landing site, Winston says. We've used nearly all of our fuel. Once we set down, we may not be able to take off again. Shall we land at the North Pole, the equator, or halfway in between? Tell Winston to land at the North Pole. Tell him to land halfway in between. Tell him to land at the equator.
Halfway in between.
Land mid-latitude, you tell Winston. We're most likely to find refugees from Earth in the temperate zone. You brace yourself as the capsule screams through the Venusian atmosphere. After the retros have fired and the acute deceleration phase is over, you sit up and look out.
It's kind of cool. I like this.
You're descending into a rainforest. You see a fast-flowing river cutting its path through the jungle. The water is a brownish-green, except in some stretches where it's almost white. Rapids, you think. Where will the capsule land? You're afraid to look as the treetops fly by.
This Splash! Is Journey 3000.
Right in the river.
It's a
Winston,
skill.
Winston, you yell. Don't be alarmed. We landed in the only safe place. You look anxiously out the porthole. The capsule is drifting up against a logjam. The sky is getting dark. Seconds later, rain is coming down, harder than you ever saw on Earth.
It's a choose-your-own-adventure
game. Winston,
if
this keeps up, the river may flood. What can we do? Silence. Winston, did you hear me?
Yes, I did, your computer replies at last, but I have insufficient data.
You feel like kicking this computer. It dumped you in a Venusian river, and now you're in danger of drowning. You gaze out the window. You might as well be under Niagara Falls. The surging water is floating you higher up onto the logjam. You're afraid it will break and your space capsule will be carried downstream and smashed in the rapids. You could get out and probably walk on the logs to shore. Get out of the space capsule? Stay in the space capsule and wait for the rain to stop.
Get out of the space capsule.
You strap on your backpack, open the door, and start walking along fallen logs that extend all the way to the riverbank. You can barely see through the driving rain. The water is rising rapidly. Wavelets lap at your feet.
Uh-oh.
The footing is slippery. You keep moving. A fierce wind gusts in your face.
Oh, boy.
Halfway to shore, waves wash over your ankles,
Uh-oh.
Then up to your knees.
Uh-oh.
You try to move more quickly. Another gust hits. You struggle to stay balanced. A branch riding the crest of a wave smacks into your legs, knocking them out from under you, toppling you into the river.
There we go.
You thrash wildly, struggling to keep your head above water as the river sweeps you downstream. Twirling, twisting, you bob in the churning waters until the torrent smashes your head into a rock.
Ow.
The end.
Oh, that was bad.
You have found 8 out of 32 possible endings and explored 32% of the story. Do you want to return to your previous choice or start over?
Previous choice.
You feel like kicking this computer.
Yeah, this is actually
a book from the
80s. It dumped
you in a Venusian river, and now you're in danger of drowning. You gaze out the window. You might as well be under Niagara.
So we can skip and then get the...
You feel like kicking this computer. It dumped you in a Venusian
river. I can't.
You feel like kicking this computer. It dumped you
in
a Venusian...
Stay in the capsule.
You watch anxiously as the water continues to rise. In a few minutes, the route to shore is blocked by the swirling waters. The only thing holding your space capsule against the torrent is a huge fallen tree wedged in the logjam. As suddenly as it started, the rain stops.
Ooh.
In moments, the sun is shining. For the first time, you can see around you. The jungle looks more beautiful than frightening. Huge, broad-leafed trees dominate the landscape. The forest floor is a bed of dead leaves and ferns, interrupted by clumps of violet and pink flowers. You'd like to go ashore, but you'll have to wait until the water level falls. You sit by the window, waiting. Instead of dropping, the water level continues to rise. How can this be, you wonder? Then realize that although the rain has stopped, feeder streams are pouring into the river. Get out of the capsule while there's still time. Wait for the water level to recede.
Get out of the capsule?
Almost the moment you've made this decision, the logjam breaks, and your capsule is careening down the river, bouncing off rocks as colliding waves toss it about. You reach for your restraining straps. Bang! The capsule bounces off a rock. You are thrown violently forward. Ooh. Your head hits Winston's control panel, and you're knocked out cold.
Uh-oh.
You rub your bruised head. Gradually, you remember what happened.
I was waiting for it to go.
You look outside. The capsule is nestled against the grassy riverbank, held by a fallen tree sticking out from the shore. You can step out of the capsule and be on your way.
Yeah, 32.
You load your supplies into your backpack and grasp the handle on the hatch door. But it won't open. You jiggle the handle, then push against the hatch with all your strength. It won't budge.
Uh-oh.
It must have jammed when the capsule was being battered in the rapids. You sit there, sweating. You have only a 2-week food supply, then the prospect of starvation if you can't escape. You try to stay calm. Winston, the hatch is jammed. Can you open it? A moment later, your computer replies cheerfully, "Sorry, I'm not programmed for that." You sit helplessly, trying to think. "Winston," you plead, "isn't there something we can do?" Silence. Then, "Nothing." A wild idea comes into your mind. You could order Winston to fire rockets and blast off. As if he's reading your mind, Winston says, "I've analyzed what would happen if we fired our launching rockets to get out of here. But we aren't positioned properly. We would just blow ourselves up." "What about the retro rockets?" "We would be propelled to the other side of the river and smash into the rocks on the opposite side." It's a long shot, but it seems like your only chance. Give the order to fire retro rockets. Decide it's too dangerous.
Fire retro rockets.
You strap yourself in. Fire retros. Crash!
I love that he does
the capsule
sounds.
Whirls across the river, smashing into rocks, crushing its nose, and popping open the hatch.
Oh!
You're pretty shaken up, but not really hurt. You're free. You climb out of the ruptured capsule, happy to stand on solid ground. Though you've landed far north of the tropics, the temperature must be 90 degrees in the shade of the broadleaf trees. The ground cover consists of dead leaves, big as dinner plates. They form a thick carpet that prevents other plants from growing except for occasional giant ferns. You wander a ways into the forest, looking for signs of edible plants or animals, or some kind of human life. The forest is full of birds, which sound like the trilling
the sound
of oboes.
10 out of 10.
Sometimes you spot a flash of color in the leaf canopy high above, or behind a giant fern. Insects seem absent, and you're glad about that, even though you suspect there are hordes of them in the layers of fallen leaves beneath your feet. Suddenly you hear a rumbling in the forest floor.
Uh-oh.
Some heavy animals must be stalking through the forest.
Uh-oh.
Then you see them. A troop of beasts that look like giant ants.
Uh-oh.
Super giant ants, almost as big as elephants. And they will be passing you on both sides. Run for the river. Stay motionless.
Stay motionless?
You freeze. You don't dare to breathe. The giant ants, their heads bobbing above you, lumber past. None of them looks at you. You stand still, shaking, wondering why you're still alive. If they had been elephants, they wouldn't have missed you. Maybe these creatures are hardwired, genetically programmed to respond only to something that moves. You've heard that frogs will starve to death before they snap at a fly that's not moving. In their minds, if it's not moving, it's not food. But why are you daydreaming? You've got to figure out how to survive on this weird planet. You look around for a clue as to which way to go, but your attention is diverted by a buzzing noise.
Uh-oh.
A bee is flying by. Except for its unusual crimson color, you might mistake it for a bumblebee on Earth.
Man, his sounds are amazing.
You wish it wouldn't buzz near you like that. It's coming again. It soars away. Maybe it thinks you're a flower. Now it's returning, along with a lot of others. They're surrounding you. They haven't attacked yet. Maybe they won't. In the distance, you see more bees flying towards you.
What is this? Boy.
You've never seen bees act this way before. You feel like running, but it seems certain they'd follow. Anyway, it's too late. A huge swarm is circling your head, buzzing in a variety of pitches that sound like one rich harmonic chord. Now they swoop off in the direction of the sun. Then they circle back, then spiral off again, their movements perfectly coordinated. It's almost as if they want you to follow them. Follow the bees. Go the other way.
Follow the bees.
Following the mysterious bees through the forest, tramping on rubbery leaves, you come upon a grove of stately trees. Their massive exposed roots spread out like buttresses of a cathedral.
But
the air is filled with the harmonic drone of bees. You are filled with awe at the beauty of your surroundings and the strange feeling it gives you to be in a city of bees. Strange thoughts enter your mind. Somehow you know they are coming from the bees, and that when they come together in large enough numbers, they gain a collective intelligence, a wisdom rarely found among humans. From the bees you learn that they do not seek power over humans or any other creatures. Their only desire is to be left alone. You sense that they are listening to your thoughts, even to thoughts that you're not thinking now, but that lie within your mind, thoughts you might think sometime, perhaps tonight as you're going to sleep. Now the bees are telling you about a path through the forest, a path they know you should follow. Following their directions, you travel along a twisting path that winds higher and higher until you reach a plateau covered with grass and clumps of gnarled, copper-colored shrubs. You gasp at what you see before you. A perfect silver sphere, about 6 feet in diameter, hovering inches above the grass as if suspended by a magical force. Walk up to the sphere and examine it. Keep your distance from it.
Walk up to the sphere and examine it.
You walk up to the sphere. It has no doors or windows.
Yeah, I think bees sound horrifying.
It is an object of pure beauty. You feel no reason to fear it. You try to touch it, and your hand passes through its surface as if there were nothing there. Is the sphere real, you wonder, or could it be a hologram? You step forward, and then you are inside the sphere.
Whoa.
Floating in a space that seems to contain nothing but glowing, misty patches of light.
Uh-oh.
Looking at your body, you see that it, too, is glowing softly, a smoky, bluish apparition. You feel as if you no longer exist. You feel you are no longer in the present. All light dims. All is black. All is silent.
The end?
Though you are still conscious, you haven't the slightest sensation, nor even awareness of your body. Until you are aware. Aware that you are in your own time and on Earth. Listening to Journey to the Year 3000. Dr. Freeman was right. A time machine would be invented by the year 3000. Through great good luck and the kindness of the bees, you found it. The end.
Wow.
You have found 9 out of 32 possible endings and explored 39% of the story. Do you want to return to your previous choice or start over?
Stop.
Thanks for exploring Journey 3000. I'll remember where you left off.
Okay, cool.
If you enjoyed Journey 3000, don't hesitate to leave a review in the Amazon Skill Store.
So obviously there are a lot of endings. We've only found a portion of them. I didn't want to stream this for too long because, I mean, really, you know, I don't want to ruin it for you guys. You might want to find it yourselves. So that is a really cool skill. I hope they do more. I actually like the idea of dramatizing. I can't really call it dramatizing, but I like the idea of narrating these choose your own adventure books. That is a very cool Cool thing to do. So, again, that is Journey to the Year 3000. There's a link to it in the description of this video. We've got, let me see what is up for next week. So, obviously, this week was Year 3000. Next week, Space Bones, which may be a shorter game, but I still think it's going to be pretty cool. It's got some visual components that we won't actually get to check out, but it'll still be pretty fun. So that will be next week, and that will be, I believe, September 8th. So please join me for that. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Don't forget, we are on Twitter. Follow us on Pop Tales Social. We're also on Facebook, and we have a website, poptale.com. You can read about more skills and find out about what we're cooking in our Pop Tale Kitchen. That's not really the official name for it, but I'm going to call it the Pop Tale Kitchen because it sounds cool. So you can see what we're working on, what we're making, and learn about a lot of other great skills. So once again, that's poptale.com. And please check it out. Make sure that if you're not already, that you're following us on YouTube. We are here at Poptale on YouTube. I believe it's Poptale. I forget exactly what the exact thing is. But if you search, you can find us. Or maybe you're watching this stream. So I will see you guys next week. I do want to thank you for being here. Again, thank you for showing up. I know that I've been a little sparse in doing these. But hopefully from this week forward, we will have a lot more of these going on. So I will see you next week for another awesome skill. If you think that we should be checking out a particular skill that we haven't checked out, let us know in the comments. We'd love to hear from you. Either drop us a line here on YouTube or pick us up on social media. Let us know. Hit us up. Say, hey, guys, you should be playing this game. This is a really good one. And I'd love to know what you think about this skill. What did you think about it? What did you like? What didn't you like? Let us know on Poptale Social. And hey, drop us a comment on this video too. So we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for being here. Until next time, this is Liam saying good night and good night.